After the Jews were removed from their nation, Israel, they were taken into captivity. Three men, one after the other, took some Jewish people back to Israel. Nehemiah was the third great leader in the Jewish restoration. Zerubbabel led the first group of exile back in 538-537 BC. That was in Ezra chapter 2. And he supervised the building of the temple. He went for the material reason. About 80 years later, Ezra, who was a scribe, a writer of the word, came to the holy city with a second group of Jews. And he brought sweeping reform through his ministry of God's word. But in time, things again deteriorated in Jerusalem. So 13 years later, after Ezra's expedition, Nehemiah was concerned about the condition that existed in Jerusalem. So after receiving permission to go and rectify the situation, he provided the kind of quality leadership that the Israelite desperately needed. From his prior life, we will see that his roots were deep in God. And this enabled him to weather all the storm of opposition that pondered him from the very beginning of his mission. So it has well been said that there are three kinds of people in the world today. You have those who don't know what's happening. There will always be those who don't know what's happening. Then you have those who watch what is happening. And then you have those who make things happen. And Nehemiah was a man who made things happen. Whereas the book of Ezra dealt with the temple and the worship, Nehemiah will deal with the walls and the everyday work. The book of Nehemiah brings God into the everyday affair of life. Nehemiah is a book about personal service to the Lord. It's about seeing a work that needs to be done and asking the Holy Spirit to be used to accomplish the work. Nehemiah lived at the same time as Ezra. And his job, he was a butler. It's always the butler who did it. He was working for the king. And he led the third and last group of Jews returning from Persia, which is today Iran, to go and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Imagine that. Iran sending men to rebuild Jerusalem. Today, Iran is seeking to remove Israel from the map. Things have changed. The book of Nehemiah has two distinct sections. First, we'll see the restoration of the wall. That's the first seven chapters. So not only the restoration of the wall, next we will see the restoration of the people. Chapters 8 to 13. So the key verse for the first section is chapter 6, verse 15 and 16. The wall was finished in 52 days, and our enemies perceived that this work was done by our God. What a testimony. The key verse of the second section, remember the first section is the restoration of the wall, second section, the restoration of the people. The key verse of the second section is chapter 8, verse 8. So they read from the book of the law and gave the sense and helped them to understand the reading. What a ministry. This has been the ministry of Calvary Chapel for almost 50 years, since 1965. We will see in the book of Nehemiah that no work for the Lord will ever go without opposition from the enemy, like we saw under Ezra. The book will teach us how satanic opposition to the work of God's people can be overcome. It is possible to overcome the attack of the enemy. Here we will see that ridicule was overcome by determination. Then we will see that conspiracy was overcome by prayer. And discouragement was overcome by encouragement. So the book is filled with important principles. We will see leadership principles in chapters 1 to 7. We'll see spiritual principles, chapters 8 to 10. And then we see moral and social principles, chapters 11 to 13. So let's start with Nehemiah chapter 1. The chapter deals with the report about the distress in Jerusalem and Nehemiah's prayer. There's two parts to chapter 1. First, we have the information, verses 1 to 3. And then we have the intercession, verses 4 to 11. So let's start with the information that Nehemiah received. The words of Jeremiah, the son of, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. It came to pass in the month of Chisli, which is our December, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. Verse 1 confirms that Nehemiah is the author of this book. There is not much information in this verse, except three things. We have his father's name, we have the date of the story, and we have the place where he worked. The winter residence of King Artaxerxes was in Shushan, the ancient capital of Persia. Like I said, today is Iran. He was working for the king. When his brother Hanani is a beautiful name, it means gracious. So when Gracious came to Shushan with other Jews, Nehemiah asked him about Jerusalem in verse 2. He was interested in God's people and in the restoration of Jerusalem. So the first thing that he did, he asked questions. It is always the first step. When someone is concerned about something, he will ask questions to know the condition. So that's what Nehemiah did. It starts with asking question. And they gave Nehemiah a very bad report. They mentioned three things to him in verse 3. Number one, the people are in great distress and reproach. The people are not doing well in Jerusalem. Then the wall around the city is broken. There's no protection. And then the gates of the cities are burned. What a report. In other words, the people are demoralized. They have no protection. They have no defense because the wall is broken down. The gates are burned so anybody can come in and plunder them. So that's the first part, the information. At verse 4, now we have a second part, which is the intercession. So it was when I heard those words, Nehemiah said, that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both my father's house and I have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, nor the ordinances which you commanded your servant Moses. Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nation. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest part of the heavens, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Now these are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name, and let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. For I was the king's cupbearer. So the report broke Nehemiah's heart. We have his reaction after hearing the condition of the people of the city in verse 4, and we see five things about him, what he did. Number one, he sat down. Number two, he wept. Number three, he mourned for many days. Number four, he fasted. And number five, he prayed to God. So after his question, we have his reaction. We see four components in Nehemiah's prayer. The first one is the address of the prayer in verse 5, also known as the adoration, when you come to the Lord. The most important part of the prayer, realizing who you are addressing your prayer to. It makes all the difference in the world to realize who you are asking to work on your behalf. So we have the address of the prayer. And his address has three different things that he addressed God. First one is the God of heaven, the one who created it, the creator of the universe. So he addressed the God of heaven. Then he addressed him as the great and awesome God. There is no limit to his power and his greatness. And then the one who keeps his covenant and mercy. It is good to remind ourselves that God is a God who keeps his word and he keeps his promises. We can come to him on the basis of what he has said in his word. The greatness of God is what kept Nehemiah going. So that's the first component of the prayer, and that is the address, how he started this prayer. The one that Jesus taught his disciples was, Our Father who art in heaven, and that's the address. The second component is the confession, verses 6 and 7. So after the adoration, we have the confession to God. He said, we are guilty. We have sinned against you. We have acted very corruptly. So that's a confession. That's what we've done. Then the third component is the intercession, verses 9 and 10. And intercession is for others. So he was praying for your servants and your people. And then the fourth component is the petition, verse 11. This is for the one who is praying. He said, please hear the prayer of your servant. Let him prosper. Grant him mercy in the sight of the king. So that was for himself. That's what his heart desire was to go to Jerusalem, be used by the Lord, and to do something. So the main lesson of this chapter one is any despair, any distress in the church should deeply concern the Christian and move him to earnest prayer to see how he can help. So that is chapter one. Now we move to chapter two. Chapter two deals with the request of Nehemiah and his inspection of the wall. There are four parts in chapter two. First one is the petition, verses 1-5. The next one is the permission. He will obtain permission to go, verses 6-11. The third part is the examination, verses 12-16. He will go and examine the work that needs to be done. And then number four, there will be the exhortation, verses 17-20. So let's start with his petition to the king. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, that would be our April, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart." Then I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies waste and its gates are burned with fire?" Then the king said to me, "What do you request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven and I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." So 4 months went by before Nehemiah's opportunity came. As Nehemiah was going about his usual duties, the king noticed something different about Nehemiah's countenance. He was sad. The king was immediately curious about Nehemiah's state of depression. And he says in verse 1, this was the first time he had seen his cupbearer sad. In verse 2, we see that the king's question brought a wave of fear to Nehemiah, because sadness was not allowed in the royal presence. We will see that in the book of Esther, chapter 4. Eastern kings always feared being poisoned. Any appearance of agitation or deep concern in the cupbearer would be regarded as suspicious. In Nehemiah's response, verse 3, he avoided naming Jerusalem, perhaps so that he would not touch a sensitive political nerve in the king. He appealed to the king's sense of respect. He was very smart. He appealed to the king regarding the dead. Persians had a great respect for the dead. That's why twice he said, "My father's tomb." Between the king's question in verse 4 and Nehemiah's answer, verse 5, the cupbearer breathed a brief prayer to the God of heaven. No doubt he asked for wisdom in stating his request properly and for a favorable reply from the king. Now, contrary to some belief, longer prayers are not necessarily more effective. Shorter is better. "Help!" That's a prayer. I've always wanted to be a man able to say much with a few words, but it's very difficult, especially for me. So that's the first part, that's the petition. At verse 6, we have the second part now, the permission. In verses 6 to 11, we have the second part there. In answer to the king's question, Nehemiah told him how long he expected to be gone, in verse 6. Nehemiah then asked for the biggest favor yet, knowing that he would face opposition from many enemies. He requested letters of permission from the king to allow him to pass through various provinces beyond the Euphrates River, in verse 7. He also asked that the king write a letter to Asaph, the man in charge of the king's forest over there, in verse 8. Nehemiah knew that he would need access to timber in rebuilding the gates and rebuilding the walls of the city. In the rest of the chapter, we have Nehemiah's preparation for the work. The journey to Jerusalem, even taking the shortest route possible, would have taken at least 2 months to walk there. On the way, Nehemiah showed the governors of the different provinces the letters of authorization that he had received from the king, in verse 9. Also in verse 9, we see that the king even provided a military escort for him. As soon as Nehemiah arrived, he began to face opposition from Sanballat and Tobiah, in verse 10. And Nehemiah rested 3 days in Jerusalem before he do anything, in verse 11. Then in verses 12 to 16, we have now the third part, the examination. So Nehemiah made a careful survey of the walls, in verse 12, to analyze the problem he had to face. He did so at night, we are told in verse 13, to avoid letting others know his plan before they were fixed in his mind. There are people who tell you their plans and they're not even fixed in their mind. During these night hour, he gained perspective and he developed an effective plan to accomplish the task that he had come to Jerusalem to perform. At one place, we see in verse 14, the garbage was so deep that even his animal could not pass through. Nehemiah kept his plan secret, verse 16. He knew it was crucial that the walls be repaired if the city was to survive. So that's the third part, that is the examination. And then at verse 17, we have there the last part, the exhortation. Nehemiah said, "Then I said to them," to the people, "you see the distress that we are in. Our Jerusalem lies waste and its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach." And I told them of the hand of my God which had been good upon me, and also of the king's words that he had spoken to me. So they said, "Let us rise up and build." Then they set their hands to do this good work. But when Sanballat, the Aronite, Tobiah, the Ammonite official, and Geshem, the Arab, heard of it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you are doing? Will you rebel against the king?" So I answered them and said to them, "The God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem." So after Nehemiah had completed his survey, his secret survey at night, and he was satisfied that he had a workable plan, it was time to reveal the plan to the Jews. That's why he was there. And we see five things in this section here. First, we have the report. The first part of verse 17. Nehemiah called a meeting of the Jewish leaders, and he informed them of the terrible condition of the city's wall. Then we have his recommendation in the second part of verse 17. He urged the leaders to begin the task of rebuilding the wall. And there were two reasons for building the wall. Why do you normally build a wall? There was two reasons. It was for protection, to keep outsiders out and protect against sneak attacks. So protection. And another reason is for separation, to keep insiders in and prevent worldliness and bad association. So there's always two reasons to put a wall, is for protection and for separation. So that was number two, that was his recommendation to the leaders to begin the task. Then number three, we have the response. The leaders, they cried out unanimously, "Good, let's rebuild the wall," in verse 18. And then we have the ridicule, verse 19. Sanballat, Tobiah, and an Arab named Geshem mocked Nehemiah's plan, seeing this as a rebellion against the king. And then we have the rebuke in verse 20. Nehemiah assured the three men that the wall will indeed be rebuilt without their help. He did not want them to join in this work. He did not want them to come and help. Nehemiah was not only a man of prayer and a man of vision, he was also a man of faith. He had faith in God. Verse 20, he said, "God himself will prosper us." He was confident that the Lord was in this project and it would go up for sure. The walls of Jericho came down by faith. The walls of Jerusalem went up by faith. How much faith did he have? Do you know? Well, he had enough faith to wait. He waited 4 months. It takes faith to wait. It's hard to do. Number two, he had enough faith to ask. He asked the king to send him. He asked the king to give him letters. Number three, he had enough faith to dare others. He challenged them to get involved in the work. And they did. And he had enough faith to rebuke the enemies. He told them they had no part in this work. So the main lesson of chapter 2 is the Christian should be concerned with the sorrows and desolations of others. And he should have a deep concern for God's honor. So that's the chapter 2. Chapter 3 is a weird chapter. It deals with the record of the repair done by each builder. For whatever reason, God wanted those people who worked on the wall there in Jerusalem some 2,500 years ago, he wanted their name in his book. So there's two simple parts to chapter 3. Some people divide the chapter into 10 parts, the 10 different gates. But it is more simple to divide it into two parts, and you take the first 5 gates, verses 1 to 14, and then you have the last 5 gates, verses 15 to 32. This chapter gives us some idea of the size of this overwhelming task. But again, somehow God wanted the name of the builders recorded. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren, the priests, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and hung its door. They built as far as the Tower of the 100 and consecrated it. then as far as the tower of Ananel. So the priests were the first to begin the task by repairing the sheep gate. They set an example by starting the work. This gate was named Sheep Gate because the sheep destined for the temple altar were brought to that one gate. So that's the first gate. Remember, there's 10 of them. First one is the sheep gate. In verses 2 to 14, we have the other four gates. Nehemiah was a clever and capable organizer. He divided the wall into sections, each section running from one gate to the next gate. Each section was assigned to a different work party. All sections were built simultaneously. There were 42 different work parties, and each worked on the section of the wall nearest his house where he lived. That was smart. They would work hard to protect their house, to protect their own neighborhood. So the gates are mentioned counterclockwise. We started with the sheep gate. Then we had, that was in verse 1. We have the fish gate in verse 3. We have the old gate, was also known as the corner gate, in verse 6. We have the valley gate in verse 13. And we have the refuse or the dung gate in verse 14. But that's the first part, the first five gates. At verse 15, we have now second part, the last five gates. There we have the fountain gate in verse 15, the water gate in verse 26, nothing to do with President Nixon. We have the horse gate in verse 28. We have the east gate in verse 29, the Mifkad gate, or also known as the inspection gate, in verse 31. Verse 32 brings us back full circle to the sheep gate. So you have all 10 gates there. The work was finished in 52 days. That is just about 7.5 weeks. It shows us what can be done when God's people are a praying people, a planning people, and a productive people. So the main lesson in this chapter 3 is very simple. If everyone would sweep in front of his own door, the street would be clean. We all have to do our part. And if we all do our part, then the work would get done. Then chapter 4, last one for tonight. This chapter deals with the different types of opposition to stop the work. There's three parts in chapter 4, three different opposition. First one is ridicule, verses 1 to 6. The second one is intimidation, verses 7 to 9. And then we have discouragement, verses 10 to 23. Nothing goes on for God in this world that Satan does not oppose. If one tactic does not succeed to stop the work of God, then he will try another tactic. The next three chapters, that's chapter 4, chapter 5, and chapter 6, they show us the various types of opposition that Nehemiah had to struggle with, opposition that still exists today. So Nehemiah said in chapter 4, but it so happened when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, that he was furious and very indignant, and he mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren and the army of Samaria, and he said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifice? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stone from the piles of rubbish stones that are burnt. Now Tobiah, the Ammonite, was beside him, and he said, whatever they build, if even a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads and give them as plunder to a land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity and do not let their sin be blotted out from before you, for they have provoked you to anger before the builders. So we built the wall, and the entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Sambalat's displeasure turned to intense anger in verse 1. With his associates, including Tobiah and Geshem, that we've seen earlier in chapter 2, verse 19, and in the presence of the Samaritan soldiers, Sambalat started to ridicule the Jews. Mutual enemies became mutual friends in opposing the work. Sambalat and Tobiah and the Samaritans teamed up with the Arabs, with the Ammonites, and with the people from the Philistine. They all joined forces against the Jews. And even in the last days, we see in the book of Revelation, at the last battle, when they're finally going to go against Israel, again, many nations will join together against the Jews. So Tobiah the Ammonite also tried to discourage the worker in verse 3. He ridiculed them, saying that a fox weighing only a few pounds would break that wall down by just climbing on it. Prayer was a distinct and consistent part of Nehemiah's approach to problem solving. When there was a problem, the first thing he did was prayer. For many Christians, the last thing they do when they face with a problem is prayer. They try to wheel and deal. They look who they may call, who can help, and they try all kind of stuff. And the last thing they do, they pray. Not this man. That was the first thing he did. Even while those people were ridiculing him, and we have it in verses 1 and 2, the ridicule, and then we have his prayer, hear, O our God. So verses 1, 2, and 3 is ridicule, and 4 straight goes into his prayer. When faced with Sambalat, demoralizing attack, he immediately asked God for help in verses 4 and 5. After praying, Nehemiah and the Jews continued their work. The wall reached half of its intended height in verse 6. So the first opposition did not stop the work. So at verse 7, we have the second part, the second opposition, intimidation. There in these two verses, now it happened when Sambalat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites, those are the Philistines, heard that the wall of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to close, that they became very angry. And all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God. And because of them, we set a watch against them day and night. So the rapid progress increased the threat. Their enemy decided to join together Sanballat and the Samaritan in the north, Tobiah and the Ammonites on the east, Geshem and the Arabs were in the south, the Philistine and the men from Ashdod on the west. And they plotted together to attack Jerusalem from all sides and to create confusion in that work. In verse 8, We're going to come from all over. We're going to attack them, and we're going to distract them, and we're going to scare them, and they're going to stop this work. Again, the people prayed for help, but they added action to their prayers. There's a time to pray, and there's a time to do something. There are people who are only total prayer. They pray to the Lord, and they do nothing. They're looking for a work, they're looking for a job, and they say, oh Lord, provide me a job. They won't look in the paper, they won't knock on some doors, they won't look for a job, but they're only praying. There's two parts. You pray and you do. Here these people, they prayed and they added action to their prayer by posting a guard around the clock to meet this threat. Then at verse 10, we have the third part, discouragement. Then Judah said, the strength of the laborers is failing, and there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build a wall. And our adversaries said, they will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease. So it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came that they told us 10 times, from whatever place you turn, they will be upon us. So the people were physically and psychologically exhausted, and the work seemed endless. So much rubbish, he says in verse 10. Furthermore, they faced the threat of a secret attack in verse 12. In verses 13 to 15, Nehemiah established a new strategy to meet the threat of enemy infiltration. He positioned some of the people behind the lowest point of the wall with sword and spears and bows in verse 13. He armed the workers, praised the Lord, and passed the ammo. Still works. So with the element of surprise gone, Judah's enemies abandoned their plan for a direct attack. From that time on, half of the Jews, they work at construction, while the other half stood guard. In verse 16, even the builders, they carried weapons. In verse 17, Nehemiah kept a trumpeter with him at all time. Verse 18, every one of the builders had his sword girded on his side as he built, and the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me. So he kept a trumpeter with him at all time to sound the alarm in case of attack and rally the men who were spread all over, all along the wall. In verse 20, so those who came from outside the city were ordered to spend the night in Jerusalem to be available if needed. Verse 22. At the same time, I also said to the people, let each man and his servants stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be our guard by night and a working party by day. So he really used the people wisely. So their strategy was to pray, to watch, and to work. The people imitated the courage of their leader. Nehemiah, his relatives, his servants, the Persian guard that accompanied him, they did not take their clothes off except to wash them. Verse 23, I hope they washed them more often than before it stink up the place. So that they did not take their clothes off except that everyone took them off for washing in verse 23. That was a serious work. So the main lesson of this chapter 4 is the reproaches of enemies should move God's people to duty rather than drive them away from it. So Nehemiah is often used as an example of effective leadership. There are many books written on effective leadership using the book of Nehemiah as the reference. First, he had a vision of a goal to be achieved. It's important to have a vision. Without a vision, the people perish. So he had a vision. After analyzing the problem, he decided on a proper course of action. He was not too quick to move. He looked around and analyzed the problem. Then he knew what to do, what course of action. Then he motivated others to share his vision and to become actively involved. Next, we see him delegating authority and assigning tasks to others. He supervised the work. He checked on their performance until the project was satisfactorily completed. Excellent example of effective leadership. In his commentary, Warren Wisby, I like this old guy, he said, "Some people are constructionists, helping to get the job done. Others are destructionists, busy tearing down. A third group is made up of obstructionists who create problems for the people doing the work." And then he asked, "In which group are you? Are you a constructionist, a destructionist, or an obstructionist?" Big words for me, but I understand what they mean. So there are two kinds of prayer that we can pray. Two kinds of prayer we can pray. Comfortable prayers. "Lord, please meet that need." That's comfortable prayer. Or commitment prayer. "Lord, use me to meet that need." Two different things. Many people, they like comfortable prayer. Most Christians prefer the comfortable prayers. It may be easier to ask the Lord to raise someone else to do the work, but then they miss out on what God has for them if they go and do the work. They miss out on wonderful blessings. So let's learn from Nehemiah not to pray to be comfortable, but be available and ready to be used by God. Some mighty walls may get built for the Lord. The next few weeks, we have a Christmas break on Sunday evening. We'll have the children's play. We'll have Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve. After that, we will continue the story with four more types of opposition to stop the work. So you can read chapters 5, 6, 7, 8. So we saw tonight that Nehemiah was a man of faith. He had much faith. How much faith do you have? Do you have enough faith to wait? It takes faith to wait. Nehemiah waited 4 months. Do you have enough faith to wait? Do you have enough faith to ask? Nehemiah asked the king to send him, and he asked him to give him letters. And it takes faith to ask someone, especially someone powerful as the king. Do you have enough faith to ask? Do you have enough faith to dare others? Nehemiah challenged them to get involved in the work. And it takes faith to challenge others to get involved in a ministry, to get involved in serving the Lord. Do you have enough faith to challenge others? Do you have enough faith to rebuke the enemies? Nehemiah told the Samaritan that they would not have part in this work for God. And it takes faith to rebuke enemies. Do you have enough faith to rebuke them? If not, if you're lacking in any of those, don't have faith to wait or to ask or to dare others or to rebuke the enemy, ask the Lord to help you and to increase your faith. So may the Lord be with you. May the Lord bless each and every one of you. May He bless your week. May He bless your work starting tomorrow. Bless your home. Bless your family. May He give you the faith that is needed in your life. May He increase your faith. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.